The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
There is a phrase in baseball that means calm down because you're overswinging.
What is it, Douglas?
And the phrase is, you cannot hit a leadoff grand slam.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
You cannot hit a leadoff grand slam. Calm down, see the pitch, drive it somewhere, but don't go up there like you're Yasmani Tomas and you think you're going to hit a 500-foot home run just in order to strike out 200 times.
I see.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. You can't hit a leadoff home run. Guess what happened last night?
What?
Edwin Rios for the Los Angeles Dodgers did something that really drives me nuts. He became the first human being in baseball history to hit a leadoff two-run homer.
Why do you say that, Douglas?
He hit a home run at the top of the 13th, and because of this stupid rule, there's a guy on second base. It's a leadoff two-run homer.
There you go.
It's just so dumb. I can't tell you. What, explain that.
They're trying to shorten the game, Douglas. That's all Major League Baseball is trying to do.
An alien comes down from outer space and asks, tell me about baseball. And says, well, the first guy up hits a two-run homer.
Yeah.
Hey, well, wait, the first guy up? If he's the first guy up, how did two runs score? Well, we just magically put people on second base.
Can you imagine how badly that would mess an alien up, base an audience? Can you imagine just how mind-numbing that would be to him? Traveled all the way across the galaxy, the universe, and suddenly math no longer exists. That's interesting. You know what? Speaking of aliens, base an audience, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. If there are aliens, run.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, how far have we come on this show that you're even at the point where you say if?
Right. I'm just saying, I don't believe in aliens,
right,
ladies and gentlemen. UFOs are all over the place. You better believe it. But aliens, I don't believe in that. But if there are aliens, Basinonians, run. Because their intentions are not good. I mean, logically, let's look at this, right? Why would they explore this world and do everything they can to hide their presence unless they had bad intentions? Ask yourself that, right? Why wouldn't they just, I don't know.
I've never thought of alien diplomacy before, so I'm glad you're here.
This is great, Douglas, but think about it, right, Basin audience? Why wouldn't they just enter our atmosphere and land their craft on the front lawn of Jeff Bezos and say, hey, we come in peace? Why all the subterfuge, right? Why not just say, we're here? Hello, we've traveled all over the globe. Dare I say the galaxy.
Yeah.
And you know what? We come in peace. Why wouldn't they do that?
Well, you know, some of the people that Paul plays sound from in Paul's Call,
yes,
they haven't come in peace. They've already, I mean, those people have tried to tell us they've already been abducted.
Yeah, right.
So.
You're right. So, you know what? Honestly, there's further evidence right there, Basin audience. If, in fact, there are aliens, time to run.
I didn't think of that. I just don't know if do we have the weapons to defend ourselves against that. We don't know.
We've got weapons, all right, but I don't know. I've seen the sci-fi movies. All right? I've seen the sci-fi movies and how that goes. They have better weapons.
Yes.
You would
yes.
imagine if they're able to actually travel all the way across the universe, Basin audience, at some point in time, they must have better stuff than we have. I think that's just a fact. And would you go to Mars? There's the question of the day right there. Would you actually be one of these guys? You saw NASA, of course. They're going to go to Mars one day.
Yes.
We all understand this is coming. What does it take, 2 years to get to Mars? Is that what it was?
I think 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
There you go right there. Maybe it's round trip.
It might take 2 years to get back. I don't know. I don't know about getting back. I kind of have the feeling sometimes they put more time into getting to Mars than getting back from Mars.
Honestly, could you do that, though, right? Could you?
If I had no kids, absolutely. If I had no kids, I love space. If I had no kids, I would love to say I'm one of the first human beings to go to Mars.
I would have to say, you know what, honestly.
With kids, no way.
If you had no life, maybe you could do it. if you had no life whatsoever.
A quick search. NASA's website says it takes about 9 months to get there and 9 months to get back.
Wow. Thank you, man.
They also count 3 months there, so you got to stay for 3 months.
Okay, and there's a lot of stories of how do you get back. Like,
it just says, it literally says, all in all, your trip to Mars would take about 21 months, 9 months to get there, 3 months there, and 9 months to get back.
I love that.
Okay, well, there's one line of thinking that, you know, how they blow up, you know, basically a different, just like in your car. When you get into a front side accident, they surround things with airbags and they bounce on the surface of the moon, like Pathfinder and things like that, when they send stuff. They would want to send stuff first, and then you've got to land somewhat near the supplies that have landed, and then it takes you're kind of building your ship back a little bit, or building the fuel and stuff like that.
That would be helpful, would it not? Yeah. If you landed near it.
Yeah, I don't know if I could trust my crew members enough to do the things we're all supposed to be doing to get back.
Yes.
I totally believe we can put a man on Mars today. I totally believe that. I don't think we can get him home for a long time.
Well, that's part of the problem right there. So what did we learn this morning, my friends? Listen, if there are
lead off two run home runs that aliens don't approve of.
Right. If there are aliens, run.
It is time for your starting five. It's brought to you by San Chevrolet. San Chevrolet, your home team for no payments until 2021 on select models. Head to sanchevrolet.com for details.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports starting five.
Speaking of aliens, Ben.
You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories.
You got a big head, Ben.
Here's Doug Franz and Rod Wolfley.
Well, not as much anymore after the weight loss.
Number five.
No, that's what makes it look even bigger.
Oh, I see. You know, that's true. That's true.
He's got a big brain.
Number five this morning. This story just drives me nuts. 26 franchises in the National Basketball Association own and operate their own G League team, and the Phoenix Suns are not one of those teams. So the owner of the Phoenix Suns, who hasn't had a winning season or gone to the playoffs in 10 years, and hasn't put forth a competitive product since the team that Brian Colangelo built got old, now knows more than 26 other owners on how to build a franchise, and he says, we can do it without a G League team.
We can do it. Yay!
Yeah, not yay for me.
Number four.
Number four this morning, Isaiah Simmons speaks to the media as the rookie is now heading into the veterans portion of training camp for the first time after being there for the week. And it became kind of a national story that he stood up and said, it doesn't matter that it's harder for me in a coronavirus world. I still want to accomplish the same thing.
No, I'm not going to adjust my personal goals just because we're having like a little adversity with.
Oh, yeah.
Make your expectation and your personal goal the fact you're going to come in and be the best player you could possibly be, Isaiah.
Sounds like that's exactly what he's doing.
Number three!
Number three is Suns start this weekend, and the games actually start tonight, in which you've got a hopeful Zion Williamson. Nobody knows for sure whether he's going to take the court today. But game one, you've got New Orleans in action. Game two, the Battle of Los Angeles, and possibly for the one seed, Clippers-Lakers. The NBA is back.
The NBA looming, of course, and the Suns getting ready to play the Wizards tomorrow.
Number two.
Number two, your top 10 is released in the NFL. A lot of talk is Lamar Jackson should be number one, and should Patrick Mahomes be three spots behind him. The other talk locally, we got a top 10, and it was the cost of David Johnson and a pick. DeAndre Hopkins is the eighth best player in the NFL, according to the players.
Speaking of aliens.
Yes.
Number one.
And the number one thing that you've got to know this morning, the Arizona Diamondbacks got a two-run lead. Everything looked like it's going just fine. And then Andrew Chafin happened.
The 1-2 from Rondon. And a line drive, base hit. That'll score a couple, and the Rangers get the lead.
So not only does Chafin give up a two-run homer, Rondon gives up the two-run single, and that knocks the Diamondbacks from the winner's column, and they split the series against the Rangers.
Get out the chaps, Douglas. This one is going to take a little bit to get over.
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. $21.6 million. and 3.6. You want to take a wild guess, Wolf, what that number represents?
No, but I'm sure you're going to tell us.
21.6 and 3.6. That is the ERA and the WHIP as of right now for Andrew Chafin.
Ooh.
On the season.
Yeah. Chafin on 2-2, and Gallo swings, hits it into pretty deep left field. Back is Peralta, and this one's gone. And this is a tie game. Opposite field home run by Gallo.
Bottom of the eighth inning, Diamondbacks are able to take the lead in the top of the eighth inning, and it seemed like a nice fight to get that lead. It's 4-2, and Chafin comes right in, and in two batters, it's a tie game.
This one, it's going to take me a long time to get over this one, ladies and gentlemen, right? I mean, especially with the Dodgers coming to town tonight. This one's going to leave a mark. There's no way getting around it. What a kick to the cradle. You know what? I once played with a guy, Basinonians, that tore all four tendons that held the quad to his knee. The trainers cut his pants off on the sideline, and his quad was rolled up on his hip. Seeing that ball on his hip, it is an image that I just can't get out of my head, my brothers. And watching the bullpen give up five after the Diamondbacks took the lead in the eighth looks like a putrid ball of flesh on a dude's hip. Just nasty.
Mm. I am always afraid when a team finds ways to lose. And what I mean by that is, if you're always kind of losing games the same way, I think that probably frustrates fans more than anything else. If it's always this guy's fault or always this unit's fault, like, I don't know, let's say pick an era of Cardinals football, and let's say that offense always did well, defense always did well, and maybe one group coached by Amos Jones never did. You at least know the problem, you know, and you can deal with that. The Diamondbacks, they're finding different ways to lose. Every group is finding a way not to come through at a different time, and when you have all of those holes in the dam, you can't cover them all up. And this is now an official problem when sometimes it's starting pitching. Sometimes it's the offense not stringing together at bats. Sometimes it's base running. Sometimes it's defense. And in yesterday's game, it's probably the one that hurts the most.
Certainly would have been a nice game to win. And, you know, I thought we did enough to put ourselves in the right position. And, you know, bullpen got banged around. They made some mistakes. Pitches that were out over the plate, and good hitters take advantage of that, and you can see the results. So it's not anything that we're used to. Our bullpen typically has been one of our strong points, but you know, you give up five runs in the bottom of the eighth inning for taking the lead, obviously it's not going to yield the best result.
You know what, honestly, Douglas, from a player's perspective, Basinonians, this one hurts the most. It really does, from a team perspective. The Diamondbacks, of course, they showed a lot of guts coming back late. Scored, what, 2 in the 7th to tie it up, and then 2 in the 8th to take a 4-2 lead? I mean, they scrapped with their backs against the wall. And then suddenly to come out and just give it away. And again, it's not like Andrew Chafin was out there trying to do that, Basinonians. He was out there competing. But to just ultimately not be able to hold on to that lead with six more outs to go, that was so discouraging. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, knowing that there's a 60-game season this year, Basinonians, that, to me, is what players are going to have to justify in their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of pressure does that continue to apply when you start off 2-4, and now you give one away like that? It's trouble.
The other thing that hurts as it relates to Chafin is he's had four outings so far this year. And in two of the outings, he put more people on base than he had third of an innings pitched. That's really where it punches you in the face. The four-game series against the Padres, it was Sunday that he came in and pitched one-third of an inning and walked two guys. Mm-hmm. What? Then, in this game, he walks and gives up a home run before he gets an out. And that is a massive punch in the face.
The leadoff walk,
Chafin.
The leadoff walk thing, Douglas. That's the thing that bothers me so much, right? especially when you're taking the ball and you're a reliever, you're coming in the leadoff walk right there. It's going to be interesting to see.
And this will hurt more when you remember both guys 0-2 count.
Yes.
No, he had both guys on an 0-2 count.
Yes, great point right there. 0-2 count, and he lost them both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is going to be interesting to see what Torrey Lovello does with Andrew Chafin right now. Chafin could be the fulcrum player that shows us how baseball has changed for Torrey Lovello in 2020.
I agree. It's a big deal here. And if you're a hardcore fan, you probably know this. But if you're a guy, man, you work really hard and you really don't have time to watch the games, but you consider yourself a big fan and you're listening in and you hear, Chafin blew it again. And, yeah, he did blow it again. Think about the dynamic, to be fair. If you go to work every day and you are someone that your boss has been able to count on time and time again, of course you haven't been perfect, but almost every time he assigns a job to you, you get the job done. You do a very good job. Now you're on a major project in a very strict timeline and you don't have time at all for any mistakes. And your boss is looking and saying, you're the only guy I can count on in this small time frame. And in this very small time frame, he gives you your job, and twice in four times, you completely blow it up in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens? You're here thinking, wait, boss man, I've given you 5 years of great work. You trust me more than anybody else. And the boss man is thinking, you're right, but I ain't got time for this at all. Like you don't understand. It doesn't matter how I feel about you. The timeline says I can't trust you right now. And that's exactly what Torrey is in. I think Torrey is going to act like this is going to be weird. Forgive and forget this one. The last one. The third one, no. I think Chafin's going to stay in his role.
Yeah.
But if he blows another one in the next week, we don't have time to find out what's wrong with you. We'll let you work that out in the bullpen. We'll let you work that out in a blowout. We'll let you work that out if we've got to blow somebody up in the fifth inning and it's early, we have time to come back. But I think he's only got one more shot as the setup man within the next week. If it's not until, you know, late August or early September that he blows one, okay, fine. We'll forgive again. But I think the leash is extremely short right now.
Well, we're going to see. We've been talking an awful lot about this 60-game sprint, right? We're going to see just how different this 60-game sprint is based on how Torrey handles Andrew Chafin.
Mm-hmm.
How many more outings, to your point, is he going to get? What a huge strikeout he got in the bottom of the eighth with two on against the Padres on Tuesday. Right? Huge! Huge, and then got blowed up yesterday. That's what happens, Basinonians, when you compete at the highest level. It is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But you got to win more than what you lose.
And
Andrew would be the first one to tell you that.
And if you didn't watch it, listen, it is not all Andrew Chafin's fault. The Diamondbacks went out 1-2-3 in six different innings. In the first, second, fourth, fifth, sixth, and even when they really needed to come through the ninth, they went out 1-2-3 in this game. Mad Bum again was good. He's good.
He's good.
Nowhere near an ace status. Rondon got blown up as well. Marte and Calhoun both went 0-3 at the top of the lineup. Jake Lamb, I don't know how much longer he gets. He's 0-4, and he's batting 0-77 right now. So up and down the team, there are plenty of people that need to step up. But that's the life of being in the bullpen. The eyeball is right on Andrew Chafin right now.
Lance Lynn reminds me so much of Rick Ruschel. Do you know who I'm talking about,
yeah,
Douglas?
I do. Right? 12 innings pitched, no earned runs is not Rick Ruschel, but you're right about the presence of Lance Lynn.
If Rick Ruschel had a fastball, he'd be Lance Lynn, okay? Minus the beard, of course, right? I mean, the body, it's just there's no definition to his limbs. He's flaccid, his guts hanging over his belt. It's like he's throwing gas. This is old school stuff from Lance Lynn.
Now, to your point before about Torrey, how long are you going to go with Andrew Chafin? He went the route of, look what he's done for us.
Sometimes we see that habit, and you know, we're all over those things.
He's talking about two different outings, leadoff walks from Chafin.
Andrew Chafin's been fantastic for us, and you know, I've asked a lot of him since we've been together here with this ball club. And, you know, he just mislocated some balls. He He had, you know, good matchups that were very, very favorable for him on a piece of paper, and then based on what my eyes were telling me, and he had these hitters 0-2. He just lacked the ability to put them away, and made some mistakes on some pitches. One pitch in particular out over the plate, so somebody hit a lot of home runs. But you know, we're aware of certain things that pop up with all of our guys, and we'll make sure that we hammer down on some of those conversations with everybody.
I have known what it's like to actually cost your team a game, or at least feel like you cost your team a game, losing a game. I know exactly what that feels like. It is a lonely, lonely place, Masonians. Right now, Andrew Chafin, for the most part, yes, we're not overreacting. Yes, we're looking at it saying it's six games, but it is a tenth of the season that has already been played by the Diamondbacks. You do not have the luxury of giving away games, and nobody knows that better than Andrew Chafin.
And that's exactly what happened. And to your point, maybe it wouldn't be the pressure if it wasn't for the fact that it's Dodgers tonight. Home opener. You come into that series with a 3-3 record. You hope to split with the best team in Major League Baseball. And now you're feeling like, okay, you know, we're sitting here 5-5. Now we move forward. Instead, you're 2-4 and scared to death of if the Dodgers win this series, you might be out of it already. Coming up next, we know now who the top 10 players in the NFL are according to the players. And they point at one Cardinal saying, you're in this group. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Action Community Studios. Paul and I are at home, but we don't live in the same home. He's on the east side, I'm on the west side.
Hi.
Paul, we don't have time to get into this now, so this is just you and me talking, and we'll just ignore everybody else. But John Canzano just wrote another article torching the Pac-12, and it's unbelievable. You've got to read.
You got to narrow that down a little bit. I mean, honestly, you know.
They have, in the 2018-2019, they paid three crisis management firms despite having the highest paid salaries of executives in conference sports. They hired crisis management firms who made the decision, you should pay the L.A. Times for positive coverage, and the L.A. Times accepted it. And the L.A. Times hired a reporter just to write nice things about the Pac-12 using Pac-12 dollars to pay the reporter.
Oh my.
Wow.
What?
And
really?
The Oregonian newspaper just found all these emails and have all of this documentation of that going on within the L.A. Times. I mean, and even L.A. Times writers filing human resource management complaints that you're telling all of these reporters we're downsizing, we can't cover this, we can't cover that, yet suddenly we are able to hire a reporter to cover polo and water polo and all these other Olympic sports and travel to China covering cow basketball because you now suddenly have this money. And it was really Pac-12 money to get Pac-12 coverage.
You're darn right they're outraged. We know about the ineptitude of the Pac-12 and how everyone's in it for themselves, but when they basically expose corruption at the L.A. Times,
man,
that's the bigger headline here. My goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot here. And I've only read half the article, so we'll keep an eye on that if more stuff breaks. But, boy, every time – like, think about this. Think about, we've got the Diamondbacks bullpen blowing up. We've got Suns starting tomorrow, the NBA starting tonight, Coyotes in the playoffs next week. We've got a rookie for the Cardinals saying incredible things, and we've got D-Hop in the top 100, and still Larry Scott finds a way to make the Duncan Wolf Show.
Yes.
I still can't believe the presidents of this conference think this guy's doing a good job.
I've got it. Larry Scott in the Pac-12 must be responsible for Patrick Mahomes being number 4 in the top 100. That's the only explanation.
That was the eye-opener, was it not, Bully, right there?
They didn't want a Texas Tech quarterback.
Come on. How about the Chiefs then tweeting out, Patrick was number 4 last year and ended up with a ring and a Super Bowl MVP trophy. Oh, not to mention he's a $500 million guy with a stake in the Kansas City Royals, and he just bought himself a new Ferrari.
Once again, remember, it's the players that are voting on this, Masonians. You've got to always remember that.
At least they said there's a Cardinal in the top 10.
As far as, like, stopping him, I mean, you put your best guy up against him, and best of luck with that.
It's set. Going over the middle. Got a man, Hopkins. Throw to Hopkins. He's got it.
Good Gilmore's been playing. He's facing a different animal tonight.
A lot of receivers don't have that dog mentality, and he has that. He's got to be top 10, too. You know, he's probably the best receiver in the NFL right now.
His hands and catching the ball, comparison to none.
This is the first time DeAndre Hopkins has been voted onto the top 10 of the players list.
You know what's amazing? I don't know if anybody else is like this, but I'm at the point still, when someone says the name DeAndre Hopkins, I don't think about the great catches. I don't think about as a receiver. I don't think anything about DeAndre Hopkins anymore. I think of Bill O'Brien and Steve Keim. I mean, I still can't believe that for the price of an overpaid running back in an era where people are saying stop paying running backs, in an era where Todd Gurley gets cut, in an era where Stephon Diggs costs an arm and a leg to be traded to Buffalo, the Cardinals got this guy for that price. And how old is that story now? I still can't believe it.
Based on the video, and you just played a couple of clips right there, I'm guessing that when the news of the trade came down, Sean Payton jumped on his desk and started doing a dance. Because if you saw some of the best stuff in that video was Sean Payton being mic'd up when it was Saints-Texans.
Yes.
And Sean Payton, as DeAndre Hopkins caught his first touchdown pass, he's like, what in the Sam name of bleep? And then he's ranting and raving up and down the sideline saying, we had this guy number one on our bullet point list in the game plan, and he's already got two touchdowns. What the bleep is going on out here?
It's going to be so interesting to see what defensive coordinators do to DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray based on needs, because that's going to be job one for the most part, going in and stopping that connection right there. Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. How are they going to do that? That's what I want to know. There's going to be one area where everything that a defensive coordinator wants to do will not be achieved. And that is if, in fact, Kyler Murray pulls the ball down and starts running. If he starts running around and creating with his legs and extending plays, that's where a defensive coordinator can't go ahead and actually defend DeAndre Hopkins the way that he wants to.
Especially for me when, and no offense to Mrs. Fuller and her family and anybody else associated with Texans wide receivers, but there's no way you can get me to believe that the Texans wide receivers minus DeAndre Hopkins are better than the Cardinals receivers minus DeAndre Hopkins. And so now I'm not saying that a defensive coordinator has to spend every ounce of energy he's got trying to stop Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald, but at least to me, there's enough weapons there that they're good enough to really hurt you if you are doing everything you can to shut down DeAndre Hopkins. I'm so with you, Wolf. I think that this is going to be a devastatingly good offense if they all can get on the same page in a coronavirus world that totally changes all things football preparation for everybody.
You know, this time a year ago, when we were all trying to figure out what to expect with Cliff Kingsbury's offense, a lot of the defensive guys in the Cardinals locker room were comparing the Cardinals offense to what the Warriors do on offense in the NBA. Spread the floor, spread the field, get guys in space. Now, the question is, Cliff Kingsbury, to what degree was he even able to attempt that last year with the lack of weapons and the receiver core, and then he had the injury to Christian Kirk, and then obviously he adapted and they became more of a running team and they got to the point where they're dressing four tight ends. Okay. But to your point, Doug, with this complement of receivers right now, arguably the best receiver room in the NFL and the coveted X receiver, the outside guy who's going to help so much in spacing, okay, now what does the Cardinals offense look like if it comes to fruition the way that Cliff Kingsbury has drawn it up?
Even if you doubled DeAndre Hopkins every play base in Orleans, even if you doubled him every play, you played in and out on him or high and low on him, you played man with a safety over the top, whatever it is, even if you doubled him on every play, if Kyler Murray pulls that ball down and starts creating with his legs, now all of a sudden you got problems, because that's where DeAndre Hopkins is so good. That's where he really separates himself, his ability to uncover. Isn't that right, Deshaun Watson? You better believe it.
Let me pose you a very difficult question, especially since they're in the same division and we don't want one guy to do well because it benefits another team. But in the ranking of the players, the first ever tight end made it into the top 10. Ever.
Yep.
And that was a little shocking to me that includes Rob Gronkowski. I didn't know that Gronk was never top 10, but I read the stat. George Kittle is the first tight end in the top 10. And he is ranked 7 DeAndre is ranked 8. I ask you the difficult question. Who would you rather have, George Kittle or DeAndre Hopkins?
Wow, that's I'll take D-Hop. I'll
really?
Take because of the outside, the perimeter. I think he can do more damage from there.
Actually, let me recant. It says Gronk was ranked 9. I swear I read somewhere that no tight end had been in the top 10, but I guess it's more he's the highest-rated tight end ever.
Yeah, I'll still
Gronk
take a
was
guy.
9. You're going because for me, it's Kittle just because I love tight ends. I think the fact that he blocks and does a lot of other things, but I don't think anybody's crazy for turning to picking D-Hop. What about you, Paul?
Well, if you believe the Seattle media, the reason they went out and traded and gave up 2 first-round picks and a player for Jamal Adams was primarily George Kittle.
Interesting.
Look what Steve Keim did in the offseason. Not only Devondre Campbell, but then Isaiah Simmons. Why? To a large degree, George Kittle.
Ask yourself this, though, right here for the most part. Are you going to see more general managers draft wide receivers before tight ends?
Yes. Yeah, totally. But that's DeAndre Hopkins in there. The highest wide receiver was Michael Thomas, gets the numbers, the highest wide receiver. He came in at 5. I think DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver in the NFL. But if you're arguing Julio Jones or Michael Thomas, I'm okay. That's fine. Choose any one of those 3. When people start getting outside of those 3 to be number 1, that's when I go, wait a minute. Do you see any of these 3 guys here?
The thing that separates DeAndre Hopkins from Michael Thomas, in my opinion, is just what I've been talking about, his ability to uncover. When a scramble happens, his ability to uncover is the best that I've ever seen.
What about his hands? Yeah, I mean, we are so spoiled by Larry Fitzgerald and these little things we're looking forward to in camp. Just when you get some of the drills going, and it's always so, it's so great to watch Larry, and just the way he catches the ball and you don't hear anything. There's just an absence of sound. The ball just disappears into his hands like it's a couple of pillows, right? A couple of cushions. Pro Football Focus tweeted out yesterday that DeAndre Hopkins had 225 straight catches without a drop, which is the most by any receiver from 06 to 19, which basically spans Larry's career. So
Wow. That's
saying something.
Larry has more tackles than drops.
No, that's the crazy. That stat hurts twice. It shows how great he could have been even more so if he had better quarterbacks who weren't throwing picks to give him those tackles. Coming up next, the Suns have their first game tomorrow, but the team's making headlines outside the bubble. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. D-backs Daily coming up in about 15 minutes, a little less than that, going through the tough loss yesterday. We'll talk to Derek Hall, team president and CEO, about the loss and the home opener tonight coming up at 8:45 today. Suns in action tomorrow, Lakers Clippers tonight. The NBA is back. Just saw somebody on Twitter ask Jared Dudley, former Sun, if he's fired up, and he had a great response. He said, hell yeah. To be able to finish this season during a pandemic is a blessing, and I totally agree with it. NBA doing a lot of good things in the Orlando bubble to keep people safe. I'm excited about it. Glad to see the Suns start. And right when we get excited for Suns basketball, something happened yesterday late in the Doug and Wolf show, and I really didn't get a chance to study it very much during the show because we were on air at the time. And when I looked at this after the show, I'm in such shock at how much I was trying to believe in the new regime of the Phoenix Suns. And then I see something that the Suns did, which I want somebody who's a positive thinking person to somehow give me faith in Robert Sarver as the owner of the franchise.
Right.
People have written, bought billboards and wrote Sarver sell, and there's been a hashtag Sarver sell out for a while. I don't mean sell out. I mean, it's been out for a while that they want Robert Sarver to sell. And I have always said, listen, you want him to sell and you think about it this way. He's already a billionaire. So don't say, look how much money you can make, because you don't buy sports franchises just to make money. You buy them for the ego of saying, I brought a championship to the city. Or in the case of Paul Allen, to save a team in a city. You know, some people do it for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So if Robert Sarver ever sells, in my mind, what he's basically saying is, I admit I couldn't be Jerry Colangelo. And I don't think the day will ever come where Robert Sarver will admit that. So that's why I don't think Sarver will ever sell. But yesterday, the Suns sold their G League team to the Detroit Pistons. And quite frankly, that I don't know if I'm allowed to say that pisses me off, but that's how I feel. It is, a lot of you might think that is the smallest thing in the world, or that's such a dumb reason to be upset at Robert Sarver. For me, it's this. 26 franchises own and operate their own team in the G League. So 26 people say this is the best way to build an organization, build a championship. And the one guy who has had a horrible on-court product, and I'm not talking about the organization here. The people that work for the Suns are unbelievably good people. And the organization itself, the game op staff, the experience of being at a game, they do so many things right. I'm only talking about the on-court product here. Mm. But you look in the last decade, ever since the people Brian Colangelo brought in to play basketball got old, this is one of the worst franchises in the NBA at winning basketball games. And now, not only do you decide the way to win more basketball games is to get rid of your own and operated G League team, that means you're going rogue, and 26 other owners say that's not the way to go. How would we trust Robert Sarver to know how to win a championship and say, hey, trust me, follow me on this, I'm going to do something different that 26 other owners aren't doing? And then to make it worse, instead of him issuing a statement, he has James Jones issue the statement on why this is a good move. The Suns' team priorities drive our decision-making, which in this case is the development of the youngest roster in the NBA.
Yes.
So they actually are arguing to us that players not playing games is a better way to develop players, when 26 other teams say players playing games is the best way to develop their players. I don't understand this line of thinking at all. And I'm not going to give Sarver any credit for going rogue when you have done nothing but lose basketball games. It makes no sense to me at all making this decision. And I realize I'm just going off on a rant about a G League team. But when everybody else in the NBA says this is how you build a team, why would you do it differently when you don't have a track record of success when you make basketball decisions? And why should a general manager be the one that takes the bullet for what you own? If you sell a bank, Robert, is James Jones going to issue a statement about that? You're the owner. When you sell a part of your franchise, you should come out with why you did it. If James Jones makes a decision on the head coach or a player or why they're doing something within the organization, great. That's the general manager. This is ownership. Why doesn't the owner come out and tell us why he doesn't own this team?
I don't know. Maybe he's looking at the Los Angeles Lakers and he's thinking to himself, my goodness, you know what? The Lakers, they have players that migrate to the L.A. Basin. They have players that actually want to go and play for the Lakers. This is what you do for the most part, right? You're either going to be really, really good at recruiting free agents that are out there. Mm-hmm. You're going to get really, really good at that if you're an NBA franchise, or you've got to develop a player. And that's why I'm a big believer in the G League. I didn't understand it either. And your point on James Jones actually being the guy that broke the news or made a statement on it, I don't understand that as well. I don't. Just going to say it flat out. There's just no rhyme or reason to it for the most part. You build a team by acquiring free agents that actually want to come play for you, or by drafting very, very well. Mm-hmm. Right? You better be good. If you're not going to have a G League team, you better nail draft picks.
Yeah.
You better nail them.
I'm flabbergasted, and I just want to know why this happens. And I read the statement, but that's a statement from a general manager to me, and this is why this scares me so much, Wolf. I totally believe in Monty Williams as head coach. Yeah. I'm so thrilled that he's here.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I should believe in James Jones or not yet, but I love the trade for Kelly Oubre. Didn't like how he handled the draft. Love the trade for Kelly Oubre. I'm kind of a wait and see.
Well, I'll
but
tell you what, though. Cam Johnson is starting to look good.
He is. And I admit, I wanted Coby White. I really wanted Coby White, and I didn't like the idea of making a trade going into that draft, and I didn't like the idea of Dario Saric, but Cam Johnson is doing fantastic. I just look at this, and I have such a problem with the whole reason why really good people in that organization haven't succeeded very often is because Robert Sarver gets involved in a lot of the basketball decisions. And now, right when I had hope that those days were over, this is a basketball decision that there's no way a general manager makes. No way. That's an ownership decision to decide if you're going to own something.
Correct.
And that means Robert Sarver got involved again when he's got excellent basketball people. He got involved again.
But see, once again, as an owner, this is exactly what he should be involved in.
And
he's he's saying, I'm going to buy a G League team or I'm going to sell a G League. This is exactly what he should be involved in, Douglas.
Yep.
The problem is, why'd you do it? That's the problem.
Great point. And you know what? If this was a winning, successful franchise in the last decade, and Robert Sarver came out and was just point-blank honest, fans, I'm sorry, the coronavirus has rocked my world, and in order to run the Suns as best as I can, I can't hold on and own this other franchise here. I need to sell it. But I'm committed to you. These are the things I'm going to do. This is how we're going to run the franchise without a G League team. And you know what? When you've got a track history of success, I'm going to back off and say, you know what? I disagree, but I'll be all right. You know, I think you should own
the
G League team.
Give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think it's the cost of doing business. When you decide to be an owner, I think you should own a G League team. But you know what, Robert? You've got a great track history over the last 15, 20 years. Go for it. I get it. I'm going to trust you. When you've got a track history like he does over the last 10 years and you make this move, there's zero benefit of the doubt. And I think owning a G League team is the cost of being an owner. It's not a financial decision where you say, well, this is now losing money. Let's get rid of it. I think G League teams help teams win championships. I think this is a terrible mistake, and it's a financial decision made by an owner that has a pretty long history of just selling draft picks or now selling off a franchise, which I don't think helps you win. And if you don't want to go the extra mile that you have to go, then just sell the team. But if you're going to own the team, then this is the cost of ownership. And it just, I had to get that off my chest this morning. I don't feel like this is the right move for the Suns. And that's an opinion. That's not fact. But I hate going against 26 other owners, and I hate the idea that your general manager makes a statement about what you own. You make a statement about what you own and what you don't own.
Let it hang.
Okay, I feel better. Thank you. What went wrong for the team? You know what? I probably wouldn't be so bad at Robert Sarver if Andrew Chafin would have got three outs and gone 1-2-3.
Probably.
Can I say that too? I'm still a little on edge about last night. What went wrong for the D-backs yesterday in Texas? That's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.